This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Grealish. Lays it off, lovely give and go, Jack Grealish, he'll carry it forward, Grealish might go all the way, still Grealish, El Mahamedy coming in, cuts it back, Grealish! Villa have done it again, it's Grealish this time!
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. And joining me, part of the trio of the new trainers that Villa now get down to Bodymore Heath a couple of days before they play a game just to fine-tune things, Dan Rogers from the villaunderground.com and Chris Budd.
Hello. Hello.
Hello, fine people.
Well, those last 15 minutes of that training session at Bodymore on Thursday, when they gathered round and they came up to us and that wisdom that we departed to them regarding what they should be doing if they find themselves level going into injury time or playing with 10 men, certainly paid off. It was beautiful to watch it all unfold in reality. So I mean should we really take credit for that?
You are welcome.
I think so. I mean, I'm very, very pleased to say that automatic promotion is still on mathematically. As I said in the short pod that went out, I think to the patrons.
We debriefed on our trip on the My Old Man Said bonus patron extra. It was one of the highlights where Dan went up to Dean Smith and told him that automatic promotion was still on and tried to convince him.
I mean, Smith, he was desperately trying to get away from me the whole time. And
it was like somebody had escaped from the local asylum and it was, automatic still on, it's still on, believe me.
I showed him the spreadsheet, he couldn't deny it. And I mean, whilst he was running and there was security staff pulling me away, he did admit that they will try and do it. So I don't see what the...
Well, Leeds did lose.
He looked quite relieved to have Tyrone Mings between the pair of you.
Yeah.
I did ask Tyrone that, well, I told for the selfie that I managed to get that he needed to get on his knees next to me, which he found amusing. I don't quite... I didn't see the funny side particularly.
Well, actually, there was a few innuendos in that bonus podcast.
Just a
well.
Few.
Just a few. We were high on life. We'd just come back from Bodymore. Did you enjoy yourself, gentlemen?
Very much so.
Dan's not committing an answer to that.
Well, Dan's day was ruined by the weather.
It was fucking freezing outside. Let's not
beat around the bush to get another innuendo in there.
It was the end of the world outside, and I wasn't at my best when trying to wrap my arms around Jack Grealish, and we'd just come from the lovely warm pool area, so that it was very strange. It was like going from tropical climates.
Yeah, and the only way you can describe it in weather terms is it was like going from Villa Park to St Andrews.
It's a shame we didn't get a few hours in the cryogenic chamber or whatever it's called.
I know, I wanted to see who they were keeping in there for
160 degrees below freezing.
You know, Miko Richards been living in there for the last season or so. Anyway, if you're a patron and haven't listened to that show, give it a quick spin. It's up there and waiting for your ears. Right, in this show we will discuss the injury time drama at Sheffield Wednesday. What a result. we will be looking back on the craziness at the New York Stadium when Villa, with 10 men, managed to overcome Rotherham after the whole playoff picture started to look a bit shady. We'll also get into the 3 points where we talk about semi-final attendances. We look at more media faux pas and also the new game of clickbait tennis, which seems to have sprouted up in local newspapers. And we have, and it's always the most eagerly awaited part of the show, the Scott Hogan touch count meter. And then we'll finish the show by looking at the latest developments in the playoff picture. Right, 3 points. Who's going number one?
Is it me first?
Yeah, Mr. Bird, go for it.
So point number one, of course, it was FA Cup semi-final weekend with the plastic supporters of Manchester City against Brighton, the Dogheads against the Hornets in the second semi-final. And I think the theme of both games was a rather soulless atmosphere and a mass of empty seats.
I thought Wolves Watford was reasonably attended, was it not?
Not too bad. The Manchester City one was poor.
20,000 empty seats for a start. So they weren't just plastic fans, they were plastic seats. 20,000 plastic seats staring back at the pitch.
Bearing in mind, Manchester City gave away hundreds of seats. Well, Raheem Sterling got 500, didn't he, just for school kids alone?
Did he?
Yeah.
The question is, obviously, it raised up the debate about should semi-finals be played at Wembley. And also, Wembley was losing its luster just by doing the semi-finals. But there, you know, now that Spurs had spent a season plus playing at their home games there, it just kind of ruined it as a venue of prestige.
Do you think on the other side of the coin now, actually, that grounds like Spurs open up the debate that you should be taking the semi-finals back out to
Oh, yeah, no, totally. I think, I mean, you put Manchester City against Brighton in, and I'm sure Brighton fans won't really want to travel up to Birmingham, but at Villa Park, and it's kind of a neutral game. It's going to be a full house. And also for those Manchester City fans who have been winning everything and travelling to Wembley every other week, it at least provides a bit of novelty to the game because they'll be playing it at a neutral ground as opposed to another trip to Wembley. Because obviously they've just been there for the League Cup final and they're looking at, you know, they should walk through Brighton. Mm. So we'll save our trip there for the final. And because obviously they've got to go to Spurs as well in that, you know. So you can understand, I mean, you know, you can call them soulless and all that kind of stuff, but you can understand.
I think they have something like four London-based trips in a very short space of time. And on purely economic basis, that's a significant commitment for any fan.
I remember when Villa used to get it.
Many years ago.
Used to get into Wembley every other week. We'd just played Manchester United in the League Cup, and then we had to play Chelsea in the semi, and they actually reduced the price to £20 just to coax us down there again.
It's an expensive day, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that was the main argument that came out of this was the prices that Manchester City fans essentially just turned their nose up at. And, you know, I think even when Villa were there, it's a piss take, the prices. Yeah. I remember those final prices, complete piss take.
Especially when there's so many Club Wembley seats available. You know, they don't open those up particularly. I think Wolves managed to have quite a few in there. But, you know, for instance, when we had the playoff final, they opened up the whole of the end, which makes for a better atmosphere. Which, of course, if it gets split, it just ruins the atmosphere.
Because a couple of seasons ago, I went to see both semi-finals, Watford versus Crystal Palace and Manchester United Everton. And, you know, both were packed and both were really good at atmospheres, especially the Palace-Watford game. But I still think, personally, I think it should be neutral grounds and go from
there. Especially now, I think, when you've got so many good neutral grounds and big ones as well.
Many increasingly bigger than Villa Park, but we'll get on to that hopefully next season when we're in the Premier League. Right, point number two. This is like a reoccurring theme, really. Ex-footballers, managers of a certain age getting tripped up by what they say. Gordon Strachan had to recently apologise for the unintended distress caused when he made comments about the release of Adam Johnson. Basically, they were talking about if Adam Johnson came back and started playing, and he compared the potential criticism that Johnson would get with racial abuse. He had said, if he goes on the pitch and people start calling him names, have we got to do the same as it is to the racist situation? In a statement, Strachan acknowledged an imprecise use of language, and I think that's pretty much what he, you know, that hits the nail on the head, really. imprecise use of language. I mean, now he's like, you know, Sky have said they're never going to use him again on their debate show. I don't know if that's going to have knock-on effects for his other pundit appearances on TalkSport, etc. But I mean, you need a bit of common sense, but there's always this social media outrage that kicks in and they want people cancelled. And in this case, I think it was, you know, you're live on TV, you're talking, or even on recorded TV when they're recording a show, and sometimes your head's just throwing out things there to cover whatever you're talking about. And I think there's no intent there. People have got to, you know, cut some slack before this outrage. But I don't think Adam Johnson will be playing football anytime soon. I mean, he'll have massive cojones if he does. But who's going to employ him? I can't really see it.
Well, he'll end up at the Blues, won't he? That's how these things pan out normally. I mean, isn't that the narrative?
All right, moving on to point number three. Speaking of outrage.
Outrage. It's clickbait tennis. So this was an article that appeared a couple of days before Villa headed to Sheffield, and it was a very biased, very defensive article around Steve Bruce, written by Alan Biggs of The Star, the Sheffield Star, which is the local, I suppose, Birmingham Mail equivalent in those parts. And what it reads like is, it's quite clever, really, because I think it stoked up any Villa fan who would read it, because it refers to Villa as having shamefully abused Bruce. And actually, when the narrative was that I think people fell out of love with Bruce over a long period of time, really, and you know, these veiled connections to abuse as a result of, without factoring in things such as the passing of both of his parents. The thing that's particularly interesting to me is how the local press picked up on it so quickly and got someone to the press conferences and stuff in Sheffield, where ordinarily they don't. It just feels a bit manufactured.
So what you're saying is, in a nutshell, is it's like a viral article that it's written to be shared, to create outrage.
I don't for one second think that Alan Biggs meant half of the things that he put in there. I think that they just, they encourage clicks, they encourage shares, and I think that there's a, my view personally is that there's a, I don't want to say there's an agenda amongst journalists to, I don't know, rile up supporters, but I think there's a...
I think it's to rile them up enough to make them click. I mean, it's basically they're trying to write viral articles. And so obviously, as you were just saying, it creates a situation where suddenly the Birmingham Mail writes a response to, without mentioning the journalist's name or trying to get personal. And you would mention his name if you were kind of attacking it back in real. And it's almost, as we said, it's like clickbait tennis. They're both doing it on purpose. With this kind of, even if it's not even conscious, if it's subconscious, it's still, it's the intent of basically just creating clicks and taking readers for a ride. And actually, it's a load of bollocks.
It's worthless, I mean, journalism, in my view.
It's worthless. And this is the sad thing.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you see how the Birmingham Mail frames its own content, where you've got their social media, Twitter, saying, you know, to a link and an article about Bruce, saying Steve Bruce is talking about Aston Villa, and then in capitals, again.
Dun, dun, dun. This is up there with that Tyrone Mings is furious.
And it connects to an article where they actually sent, and they don't normally do this, they sent a journalist to the opposition Sheffield Wednesday's press conference. So a Birmingham journalist went up to Sheffield. He's going there to ask him questions about Aston Villa. So, it's just hilarious, and it's low-frequency stuff. Just the way they frame it, it just makes it ridiculous. They're just trying to create fake outrage.
Well, you know, it's all about engagement and the old click, but
but not engagement in a good way.
No, but the thing that makes me just sort of scratch my head, really, is these are local journalists who, for months and months and months, didn't once ask a hard question of Bruce. They didn't hold him to account. And it was only towards the very end that, when the writing was on the wall,
they were guaranteeing that Bruce would lead us to promotion.
They questioned
that, and that would be the head. That would be the headline of some of their opinion pieces.
And these were the same people, by the way, the alleged journalists. I mean, there can't be an investigative one amongst them, because they allowed Dr. Tony and company to bring the club to its knees. I mean, it makes the non-reporting on Bruce whilst he was at the club seem pretty low level, really.
Yeah, but meanwhile, my old man said was writing articles about Dr. Tony and before he came on board and casting the net over what potentially were the motivations and, you know, what the reasons were. And of course, and that's just like caring about the club and just thinking, hang on a minute, before you all start masturbating over his Twitter emojis, let's scratch below the veneer. But this is what local press should be doing. But because they're not doing it, that's why it's important to get behind good independent football coverage. And, you know, this is why we have My Old Man Said patrons, because they allow us to actually do something. And because it's, I mean, bottom line is, it's not worth me writing on my blog because the advertising is a waste of time. Most of people use, you know, ad blockers and you just don't get anything from it. And it's so swamped with clickbait that you just get lost anyway. So please do become a My Old Man Said patron. And sorry, a big thanks to the wonderful people who signed up in the last week. Alex Moland, Alec Beach, Adam Treadaway, Jonathan Mulhern, and also thanks to Sean Pitt for upgrading. And also this week, I will be starting properly the My Old Man Said Facebook supporters, which is another way to support us. Now the Facebook supporters will also be privy to the bonus podcasts as well. So take a look on Facebook and also go to myoldmansaid.com. and check out the Patreon option, and please do support us and help us fight this clickbait war. Right, now onto the only part of the show that people really tune in to, and that's the Scott Hogan touch count meter. Sheffield United were playing Preston after being humbled by on their own patch against Bristol City 3-2. Preston obviously were one of the teams of this year in terms of form and made a late charge at the playoffs. And a couple of weeks ago, we were thinking they might be somebody that might be a contender to balls up Villa's attempts. But they've started to hit the treacle in terms of their charge up the league. And Sheffield United, despite being away, beat them 1-0. And Scott Hogan came on for Billy Sharp in the 83rd minute. So the question is to you, who's going to go first? I think it's Dan's time to go first this time. In 7 minutes plus injury time, and I can't tell you how much injury time there was. I do not have that information. But
you're withholding that information from me.
Let's say 3 minutes. So he's got 10 minutes. How many touches did Scott Hogan have?
Is it wrong? The first figure that came to my head was, is it possible to have zero? Is it possible? Three.
Mr. Bud.
Four.
Mr. Bud wins again.
Two for two. Come on.
It was five.
That's unreasonably high for Scott Hogan in that time frame.
Five touches in 10 minutes. That's bonkers. What's he doing?
He needs to be tested.
I think Codger came on and he had 10 minutes or thereabouts, and he managed about 15.
Well done for slipping the there or thereabouts in.
Yeah, there you go. Other comparisons, Billy Sharp. Although this is kind of interesting, because Billy Sharp in 83 minutes, the player that Hogan took over from, only had 19 touches. So that would, Hogan's well up on that at least.
Move on, this and, is a fix.
Tammy Abraham in Villa's game against Sheffield Wednesday had 32 touches as well, just to give you a bit of context. But Hogan, I mean, have we not? I mean, if this was a university master's thesis, I think we've already compiled enough evidence to suggest that Hogan doesn't really get involved in football matches.
He's in the wrong profession.
If this was a court case, the judge would have said, you've already won, so let's not go on. Anyway, let's move on to this Wednesday game that Scott Hogan didn't play in because he was too busy with the other Sheffield's team. Bruce saw the game. Did he see it differently than we did at the end?
He does traditionally.
Yes.
I mean, I did like his quote, Steve Bruce's quote, when he was talking about the second half, which I would agree that Sheffield Wednesday bossed up to a point. When he said, if anybody was going to win it, then it was ourselves. Probably their only attack in the second half, and they've scored a goal.
Scored two.
We had three attacks, Steve.
No, what I'm saying, I'm thinking that Bruce left after a Domar's goal.
Yeah, he binned it off, didn't he? Walked out in absolute disgust.
Fuck this. And never doesn't even know it's 3-1. He just thinks it's 2-1.
He just walked out to a chorus of Brucey, what's the score?
You know, unless he can't count, that's the only other option on that. Anything else that he said that kind of takes your fancy? He said something about blowing us away.
Yeah, he said, we could have blown him away. Well, Steve, you didn't. You were there or thereabouts, but not quite there.
It could have been any press conference that we heard time and time again after her.
Well, it's funny you say that, because Ipswich beat Bolton, didn't they? And I just saw the pull-out quotes of what Lambert said, and he said, "We were brilliant. We were really excellent." And it's like, yeah, I've heard that before somewhere.
After the 8-0 defeat at Chelsea.
Yeah, can't quite put my finger on it. Interestingly, Villa have suddenly gone from a team that have been putting in 90-minute performances to seemingly one that puts in a good 45 minutes and then a couple of extra minutes at the end just to make up for the mistakes of not turning up for the other 45 minutes.
We're playing badly and winning. We're getting the job done.
Yeah, this kind of backs up what we said in the last podcast about we're starting to grind and getting through it. I mean, that the first goal, Sheffield Wednesday's first goal, when I saw that, I couldn't believe it. We've just spent the last couple of weeks praising Villa's new hardy defence and Howes and Mings in the, you know, in the back, and how Whelan's been shielding them, and how the fullbacks have stepped up. And that was like a vintage dubious Villa defending goal, where Mings was way out of position, came right across, got caught out by the cross ball, and you know there was absolutely nobody there covering.
It's poor from start to finish, isn't it?
And I just thought, oh shit, the writing's on the wall here, because we've had problems with Sheffield Wednesday since we've been in the Championship, to be honest.
Yeah, they were our opening day defeat, weren't they, when we got relegated? I thought that their opening goal was horrible to watch. It was so open, wasn't it? And
The question is, should Mings commit himself in that position?
Well, in the second half, we sort of saw when he gave away the penalty that we do look still vulnerable to that ball over us, don't we? Do you think?
Yeah, the back to front thing that's been the problem for a while, certainly in the sort of the pre Christmas and over Christmas period. Quite ironic, really, that we know Bruce was one of his criticisms that was thrown his way at Villa was that, you know, this lack of being able to actually pass the ball, and yet by lumping it against Villa, he actually got a bit of joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in the second half, the defence completely, you know, made up for that.
I thought there was a fantastic tackle from Neil Taylor as well.
Yeah.
Really, really great tackle.
I mean, for pretty much 45 minutes, most of those players were getting their heads in the way, you know, arses in the way, and Taylor's tackle, I thought that was a definite goal.
Do you think we were showing a bit of fatigue?
When he was about to pull the trigger, well, no, I don't think so, actually.
So what you put it down to, though, my view was that teams are going to have spells in games where they're on top. I mean,
yeah,
give Bruce some credit. I mean, he put a man on Grealish and completely nullified him. I mean, Grealish was a passenger for most of the game. I mean, in the stats count, normally Grealish is up there 85 to 100 touches, and he only had 57, which shows you how much they kind of isolated him out there.
But did we not see a real Bruceism come that 90th minute, actually, where the telling run and pass comes from Grealish, where it never felt like the job was done all the time with Bruce. Do you know what I mean? Where the game was shut down, or you were always at risk. And though Grealish only had those 57 touches, it was very telling because he sets up Codger, who rifles off the shot, and then obviously Adoma.
As you know, Bruce said in his post-match, when you've got players of quality, you only need that second. You can't really nullify somebody completely out of the game.
Wednesday weren't... Steer wasn't diving all over the place. No. They didn't pepper the goal with shots or hit the crossbar multiple times. It was they had a lot of the ball, a lot of territory without really much cutting edge. And similarly to sort of late on against Blackburn and a few other games, Villa are able to hold teams at arm's length.
Mm. Yeah.
And then one thing we always have in our back pocket is Villa have firepower. You know, we're always likely to score.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the pivotal moment was of the whole game, I think, was the Steer penalty save, because Sheffield Wednesday were on top of us, and it was getting to that situation where potentially when you know you're under pressure, something breaks, and that was, you know, giving away a penalty. Whether it was the soft one, it, you know, he's made contact, so you kind
you
of
can
expect
see why it's given.
Yeah, exactly. You expect it. Can't really complain.
But
it's
a big moment for Steer. You know, I think we've certainly thrown at him in the last few weeks is that Villa have been getting results, but Steer hasn't actually tended to have a lot to do. Well,
yeah,
he stepped up.
He really stepped up when he was needed. I mean, was it a good penalty? No, but it's a save that, you know, he had to make, and he made a good job of it.
Yeah, exactly. And that completely switched the momentum, because there was a bit of a sense of inevitability here. It seemed if you had to put your money on, which if there was going to be another goal or two, it was likely to be Sheffield Wednesday at that stage. But as Dean Smith said in his post-match thoughts, and I agree with him. I think he did bring on the substitutes a bit too late because we needed something. We needed some fresh spark or, you know, something to change the flow of the game. And so he brought Adoma on 71 minutes for Green, who had kind of lost his imprint on the game. And then Kodja came on 82nd minute, and Smith said he did think he probably brought them both on a bit too late. But you saw the impact. I mean, Kodja straight away. Adoma, his impact initially was defending. And yeah, I think he got a decent header in
very
at one
important
stage.
Header away.
Kodja, when his pineapple finally made an appearance, there was that chance where I think he could have headed it into the far
grief,
corner.
The bicycle kick he attempted.
He's done that a few times, hasn't he?
And you're thinking, mate, fair enough if we're like ahead, but when we're like dying stages of the game, play the percentages, for God's sake.
Yeah. It was crying out for him to head it off his pineapple into the roof of the net, wasn't it? Fucking joke, man. And I'm his friend, as you know. I'm his good friend.
Yeah. Maybe that's one of the, you know, he gets that, he's in the barbers. He says, what haircut do you want? And he says, that one. So he does it. And Kodja says to the barber, any tips on maintaining? And he said, no headers.
I mean, isn't it the role of a responsible barber to say, sir, I understand you want the pineapple, but...
I understand you're a footballer, and just look at the career of Jason Lee. It never really worked out for him, so I wouldn't really recommend it, sir.
I'm sorry, Mr. Danger, but in future, just ask yourself, in any of these big life decisions, what would Dan do?
I'd have the avocado.
Smashed. Adoma again, and this was quite interesting. I mean, in terms of karma, redemption, call it what you want. Steer obviously had it against Bruce because he was sent packing on loan to Charlton, and then here he pops up out of nowhere and saves a penalty against Bruce's new team. And Adoma was doing the old man goal celebration.
Good lad.
Which is really sucking it to the SB. Just to clarify, it definitely was pointed at Bruce, was it not? Did Bruce basically say he's too old, now it's time to go, or was that a media thing?
Well, no, he seemed to have, I think he communicated to Adoma that his time was up, wasn't he? He was practically driven him to Middlesbrough. I think there's someone else as well who'd been, maybe perhaps not shipped out too prematurely, but, you know, Andre Green showed that he perhaps had the potential to be included at least in the squad this season rather than being shipped off. You know, a fantastic assist for McGinn's goal in the first half.
By the way, that goal gets better with every watch, because that is a really difficult ball to hit. It's in a cracking finish.
If you notice, in the last podcast, I was talking about Ming's diagonal ball.
They're listening to you, Dave. They're listening.
Exactly. Then Smith actually admitted, he said it's something they worked on, and basically just to make that ball a bit longer, a bit more direct. And I mean, it's really stretched Green. I mean, he just got to the ball. He did very well to get that across, and it was a smart finish.
Quite literally, my old man said, switch it.
Let's go a bit more direct with the switch, because he seems to drop it on a sixpence. As I mentioned last time, I just used that word sixpence again.
What is this currency?
Just to trigger memories. Because we had the sixpence debate in the last podcast, but I just wanted to trigger your memory that I did actually say this. But yeah, no, but it actually makes sense, because he can launch it, but with pinpoint precision. So he was really doing it as a switch. He was switching, you know, flanks. And it was just, you know, just going over the halfway line. But if you ping it up there and get the winger to run onto it, then suddenly you've broken.
It's a very hard ball to defend, actually.
Yeah, I mean, if you just pump it straight up, then it's easier to head out. But when it's going diagonally, then it catches the centre-backs out completely. Well, it negates them out of the conversation.
Well, and everyone's facing the wrong way. You know, the way that Green manages to cut the ball back, there was nothing finer than seeing John McGinn run onto that with the inside of his boot, and the out-curling strike that he manages to... Very, very nice. I do like that.
Yeah, I think I shouted, get in, you cunt.
That's normally my line.
I didn't know where that came from. I think that was the pressure of the situation, knowing that you really needed to get a result here.
It just made me want to rush out and deep fry a bloody Mars bar. I was so happy for him.
But
and douse him in iron brew.
Because at that point, it was looking more like we were going to lose the game than get anything. So you'd have, you know, even taken a draw to a certain extent, especially the way the results went after the game. To get a winner was sensational.
Yes.
And it was well worked. And Codger actually was instrumental in it. I mean, it was a decent enough shot, hit with enough power for the keeper to parry it rather than just gather it. And when the ball spilled out, I didn't think Ademar had the angle to get it in.
No, it wasn't a good angle, was it?
But the old man, tremendous, and cue limbs, cue scenes, and then Abrahams that was basically just a fuck you.
Yeah, Joe, it was a great finish, but I didn't think he had a good game at all. I think he really struggled to contribute anything over the 90. I thought Abraham, but what a great end goal.
But it showed you that he can actually make goals out of
nothing.
Because when he received the ball, you just thought, well, this is going nowhere. He'll just run down the clock or something. And then it was a quick turn, and away we went.
He's got that not in the attributes type way in terms of Benteke, but Benteke always had a goal in him from. Quite unpredictable, you know, as Abraham was overrunning the pass had been played across the front of the goal, hadn't it? And you just thought, oh, well, like you say, he'll run this into the corner. It didn't seem possible that he'd get his praying mantis leg onto the ball, least of all turn the guy, and then there's like a crowd of players in, well, he's not going to get it through there. And he does, and that's the...
Yeah, I don't think Abraham's as technically as good as Benteke, but I think he's got more enthusiasm and more effort, and he fights more.
I think Abraham, as a few pundits have said, it was the same with actually the winning goal that Adoma could have squared it. He's always there.
Yeah, he is.
He reads the game so well, and he's always in a position where he might get a chance. Mm. And more often than not, you know, he does. I don't think he's scored from outside the box, has he?
No, he hasn't, no.
Oh, just one more thing about the injury time, the goals. I mean, the fantastic thing was Wigan also scoring pretty much the same time as when Adoma scored. And that was unlikely. I mean, I think they were ahead against Bristol City. But
they took the lead, didn't they, with the world.
You were thinking, Bristol City will get something out of this. And then suddenly Bristol City are 2-1, and you think, that's that. Done and dusted. Meanwhile, Derby were having a firefight with Brentford, obviously ended 3-3. So you're content with that, but you just thought Bristol City would have had it, because we know it's going to be a battle when they come to Villa Park if they're, you know, 3 or so points ahead of us. But this suddenly made that game a lot more interesting.
Our form.
When Wigan equalised.
Our form has been the telling thing, is that the last week's results really bring it together. But I think you just look at the collapse of Middlesbrough has also come at a time where Derby and Bristol have only won 2 of their last 6. You know, it's for the first time, something I've been banging on about is going on these long, not unbeaten runs, but long winning runs, because it just drives teams into submission almost, that they can't.
We had 7 wins on the trot last season.
Mm.
And people forget about that. I saw somebody on social media, when's the last time this ever happened? last year.
But I think our...
But it didn't feel like it last year, did it? I can't remember this elation.
No.
Or am I wrong? Have I got a short memory?
I think it's good to have selective memory when following this football club. But I think at this point, you know, we would not be where we are now without, you know, it was a mere matter of weeks ago that we were worried about this season becoming complete dead rubber. And it's only turned around because an absolute, unprecedented upturn in form from where we were, really.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
You know,
And it was the stars aligning, was obviously Grealish coming back, but it was, you know, people are saying, oh, it's all down to that. Well, it's not. It was the defence suddenly coming together. But having a few games like House and Mings together just to establish themselves, and Taylor bedding in, Elmo bedding in.
I think McGinn.
Whelan finding his role, and then it just worked as a unit. Mm. And with Grealish coming in and actually carrying the ball and giving us a bit of a point of attack or a starting point, it suddenly all gelled and made sense. I mean, we watched the training at Bodymore, and I was impressed by watching the end of the training, and the tempo was
very,
you just
very
thought
high.
How that higher than you'd expect.
Yeah.
In just, let's say, a training game, it's like, wow, this is actually...
And the conditions were dreadful. I know I'm repeating myself for the benefit of people who didn't get the Patrons podcast, but it wasn't a leisurely training session, was it?
No, and you were like, whoa, hang on a minute, because you're thinking this is the end, a bit of a wind down, you know. They were kicking the shit out of Grealish.
Yeah, Abraham and Grealish were going for each other, weren't they, on numerous occasions?
That was quite funny. And then at the end, when they were kicking the ball really high in the sky, I think they were doing it to try to hit one of us. Mm. And the players were obviously, you know, trying to trap it as well, pretending that that was they were doing. But I think the agenda was to take a few of the civilians out. But no, so when I thought they would come out of the traps against Sheffield Wednesday and blow them away, I think that was potentially the game plan. But Bruce, to his credit, did stifle us a little bit. And then in the second half, and this is, you know, this happened against Blackburn as well on our own patch, we seemed to lose our direction and we were giving the ball away so cheaply. And you're thinking about this is very much still a work in progress, this Villa team, in terms of how Smith wants them to play. So we're not there yet. But the good thing is our mistakes and our weaknesses are not, they haven't crippled us in any way. We're still winning.
Well, I noticed when we were watching the back end of that training session, they were probably playing on what, maybe an eighth of the size of a football pitch, but they were playing almost a full game on it, weren't they? And it was, you can't appreciate the close control. And that's something that I think that, to pick up on your point about, I think that still we're quite wasteful on the ball. We saw it the second half against Sheffield Wednesday. I know it's different because it's, you know, training is one thing and you're coming up against, you know, an opposition that's going to, you know, test all of those things, and there's some unknowns about them. But I was really, I think I walked away, you know, I've said what I've said about the conditions, but I walked away thinking, like, this is a team that's trying to better itself, and it seems like there's a plan, you know. You can see what, if those are our shortcomings, we're working on them and working really hard at them as well.
It's like we're having pre-season as we're going along.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is one of there's a reason why I want Villa to get promoted, but one of the side-ish reasons is because it will allow Smith to keep certain players, McGinn, Grealish, potentially Mings, and so he can continue on this this education. And, you know, we'll get a few in, obviously, but at least we'll have the core still there who know the ethos and know what we're trying to do. And what we add to that group will be basically a better quality to allow us to play this way, you know, in a more proficient manner.
You can see a team that's got belief as well, can't you?
Yeah, no, the players actually as a bunch were getting on very well. And this, considering a lot of these players are loans, and, you know, some of them, obviously, you know, Abraham knows Grealish from a few years back, but a lot of them, and, you know, Al Ghazi's fitting in and, you know, eager to be a member of the group. Mings and, you know, House are like, seem to be good buddies off the pitch as well. And, you know, I was surprised actually by, you know, I just thought, actually, I like this team, and I don't say that about many Villa teams.
I think they're a unit, and they're pushing in the same direction. I think I'm sure Smith had said, was it Stoke, I think he mentioned at halftime, just simply saying, you need to be a collective unit here. There's far too many people who are kind of putting themselves in the shop window for their own good rather than the good of the Villa. And it would appear since then, because the second half against Stoke, they were vastly improved and they've really gone through the gears. You know, it's just this thing, as we've said the last few weeks, this momentum and belief in the team that actually we've got good players. You know, we've been saying this all season in different guises of the team, but this version of the team now is very different to the one pre-Christmas, in that team, as we said on numerous occasions, couldn't play badly and get a result.
Yeah.
This team can, you know, sort of stumble over the line a little bit against Blackburn. We can go to Sheffield Wednesday, who were, you know, banging form. I think were they 10 unbeaten, I believe?
I think 12.
Go there and get the win. Now, that's how you achieve things in football. You aren't going to be at your fluid best every week. And as Dan said, you know, you have to sometimes just hold your hands up. And, you know, Steve Bruce is that wily old manager who knows how to shut a game down and spoil and get the job done. And he kind of did. And you say, okay, do you know what? That was one game, but we've come through that test, and we came through the Blackburn test and the, you know, the Blues away one and Forest. You know, we've gone to some quite difficult places and had a lot thrown at us as a unit, and actually come through it very well.
So, Mr. Budd, And sorry, this is me and Mr. Bird from the future. We've now just got rid of Dan Rogers because we are now reporting in from the Rotherham game.
And he's too busy partying in his pants.
He's probably in bed. Question, what was the crazier result? The Sheffield Wednesday one, the injury time win, or this one at the New York Stadium?
I'd say the Rotherham win.
Yeah, because it looked like it was going tits up.
It looked like
it was going typical Villa.
It was one of those typical Villa moments, wasn't it? When you think, you know, you've missed the penalty and you think, oh no, here we go. And then you get the penalty against you. Then you get the red card and then they bury it and you think, oh God.
And not only that you've just gone to that trouble of scoring two goals in injury time in the game before away from home to really, you know, get the promotion playoff bus on the road and running at full speed, and then suddenly you think, oh, we're not going to, you know, balls this up and take it to the wire, because actually we're in a position now obviously that we've beaten Rotherham, a good result against Bristol, and we're kicking for home and we're leaving a bit of a gap already, which could serve as well when it comes to the last two games where we might not actually need to win any of the two games. We might just need a draw or something.
Yeah. So obviously coming off the back of Blackburn beating Derby 2-0.
Yeah, that was a bonus.
Playoff position looked a little bit more rosy potentially for Villa if they got the positive result at Rotherham, which they did. Now you've got the 5-point gap with
daylight.
With you know, all of a sudden you've actually got daylight. You know, Middlesbrough getting a result pulls them back into it. Derby have got to play Bristol. And they've got to go to St Andrews, and Blues seem to have just turned the corner.
Yeah, no, they're always a sticky bunch to get points off at St Andrews. But anyway, back to the game. The game. Tammy Abraham's penalty probably summed up the casual nature of how Villa were playing. Because, you know, after that win against Sheffield Wednesday, you're probably feeling a bit immortal. This win's going to just keep on going on and on. And they would have probably looked at Rotherham on paper and just thought, bottom three, this is probably going to be an easier game. And their eyes were really on that, what you could dub a playoff quarterfinal against Bristol City.
Yeah.
And they kind of lost themselves at the start. They didn't seem to have that. Well, I think that opening exchanges are all right, but, you know, Rotherham were offering up, you know, Steer had a couple of saves at the start.
I think Rotherham would have obviously come into it off the back of their victory against Forest, thinking we can, that's kind of like the bonus win. We can really kind of go for broke against Villa and try and get something, which it looked, you know, especially when they took the lead, I kind of feared second half they'd come out and go, do you know what, we're going to go for it here. And I think because Villa got the early goal, and then I think the second, you know, the Grealish goal, which is a superbly constructed goal, would have probably knocked the stuffing out of them.
Let's just go through it a bit slowly. The penalty, the first penalty, what was he doing? I think he was expecting the keeper to go the other way, and then suddenly the keeper hadn't gone and he was like, oh shit, I'm in the middle of just tapping this in the corner. He was already in motion.
Yeah, if I remember rightly, I think most of Abraham's penalties this year, he sent the keeper the wrong way, hasn't he? He's kind of given him the eyes, waited for them to go and just rolled it in the other corner. This one, the goalie went quite early and it was almost like, oh, as you said, oh shit, right. He didn't do either really. He could have just blasted it high like Codger did, which was a superbly taken one. And then, or put it the other way, he kind of didn't do either. It was all a bit casual.
Yeah, and it kind of caught him. But it also, that was kind of symbolic of perhaps some of the players' kind of attitude at that point. I mean, at that point, I must admit, I was thinking, well, yeah, it's probably we're going to be scoring goals in the second half here. They're going to need a bollocking at half time to get them into this game.
Yeah, and we've been kind of spluttering in bits and pieces of games the last couple of weeks, haven't we? You know, the second half against Blackburn, I thought we were kind of shaky at times. They had moments at Sheffield Wednesday where they were under the cosh, and the same against Rotherham where, you know, you can't always play beautiful, you know, expansive football. Sometimes you just have to grind it out and get the result. And that was something we've thrown at Dean Smith teams. Well, I mean, before he came to Villa, but especially since he's been at Villa, that can this Villa team play badly and get the result? Well, the last couple of weeks they've shown they can.
Yeah, but saying that, you didn't really expect Rotherham to have a chance of winning this game. Perhaps they could get a draw. I said on the segment that this is actually replacing, that Rotherham had three wins out of the last six games, and they were lively. And before the midweek fixtures, they were 1 point off safety. So, you know, they're wagging their tail still. But as soon as they get a penalty and a man sent off, the double punishment, then you thought, they've got a chance of this. I mean, a lot of Villa fans, I think, from just glancing on social media, would just sort of, it always happens when you get down to 10 men, everybody thinks it's game over. But when you look at player for player, we're far superior. I mean, I'm not just, you know, with all due respect to Rotherham, we have got one of the best teams and some of the best players in the league.
And the quality that we can bring off the bench, which, to be fair to pretty much anybody in the league, no one has our squad depth.
And Smith, you know, he didn't think, oh shit, we've got to hang on here and probably snatch a goal like, you know, let's say previous managers mentioning no names would have done. But the good thing was the positivity that Dean Smith brought into reacting to going down to 10 men when he pretty much went 4-3-2.
Yeah, went to up front.
Bringing Codger on, I thought, was a masterstroke, because one thing Codger does do is occupy defences. I mean, he can hold the ball up, not that he's holding it up to lay it off, but he's holding the ball up and he's occupying three or four players and he becomes a nuisance.
Well, he gets you on the front foot, doesn't he, as well?
Exactly, and it gives you a bit of time for to get, you know, extra support up there that's not actually there because of position, because obviously you're missing a man. And it was positive rather than just, you know, doing the normal hanging on routine. And the fulcrum of it all, the pivot, was John McGinn. He was sensational. I think Dean Smith said in his post-match that he thought there was two John McGinns on the pitch, and that's exactly what it looked like, because he could be in a tussle with two players. You put your money on McGinn coming out of it with the ball.
We talk about him so much every week, and you don't get bored of it, because he's just every week you watch the guy and he's so enjoyable to watch, home or away. Yeah. And you know, we've said this numerous times, haven't we, that even when he has a relatively bad game in terms of influencing the game, he still gets stuck in. You still get a shift from him. And you know, he was great on the ball. He's brilliant off it. And the amount of running and energy he gives you in the middle of the park, you know, in hindsight now, we can look back and say that two-game ban when he got it was probably the best thing that happened to his season.
I mean, he's got this low centre of gravity. He can spin and change direction really quickly. Actually reminds me of my sister's dog.
Oh, good.
Which is a Hungarian pulley, which is well known for just changing direction on a sixpence.
Managed to slip that one in. Well done.
Yeah. And he is sensational in terms of how he can twist and turn and get out of, you know, sometimes he's surrounded by a couple of players, sometimes three, and he manages to get out of jail.
And he holds the ball. He holds the ball up himself, doesn't he? For things like set plays, when you've got a throw in, you're pretty confident you aren't just going to lump it down the line. You actually can put it into his feet and he'll hold the ball up.
He's just got this tenacity as well, which picks up, obviously, the odd yellow card here and there, but it's...
I don't mind that.
It's fun to watch. I mean, I do laugh to myself watching him sometimes, because he's kind of remarkable.
It's just like a kid, isn't it, who just constantly wants to be involved. It's really it's really refreshing.
James Milner was a little bit like that. Give me the ball.
Or he'd get in, he wants to tackle everyone, he wants to run everywhere, he'd kind of follow the ball about a bit. Yeah, it's especially when you're down to 10 men, you know, you need a player like that.
Codger, I thought, had a good game. We just mentioned him in passing there, but probably his best game, of the most influential game in the season, because without him, I don't think we'd have won that game.
No, and I'm really pleased for him now that he got his goal, and I think he had a couple of other chances, and he put a shift in.
He allowed us to take the game to Rotherham despite being down a man. I think Grealish was a bit sloppy sometimes in parts, but in the end, I mean, the goal was hilarious, because Elmo, when he played it back, you thought, what are you doing?
Yeah, just put your laces through it.
he kind of played it straight back when you're expecting him to, as you say, put his laces through it and have a pop. And Grealish probably a bit caught by surprise initially, but dispatched it beautifully.
Oh, it's just a really well-crafted goal. You know, you wind the video back further and further, and obviously Grealish starts in his own half, and the way he takes, I think it's about three or four men out of the game with a little sort of pirouette, little 1-2 on the touchline, and then he's at the back four. And when it gets, you know, when it comes to him around the penalty spot, there's only going to be one ending there. And he buried it.
Yeah, like McGinn, he's got a different kind of movement, but it's his balance and the way he turns also
really
takes
kind of glides, doesn't he?
Yeah.
McGinn just sort of trundles.
Takes the opposition out of the game.
Yeah, or you have to foul him, don't you? That's the thing with Grealish, because he's stronger now. If you're going to get near him, you have to foul him. I mean, it was like the same for for our penalty. Their defenders just dived in. It was a stupid tackle. And the same when he's running with the ball, the only way to stop him sometimes is to foul him.
Yeah, but the odd loose pass. But, I mean, Horahan was all right. He had a couple of chances, actually.
Yeah. I think
decent chances.
All the guys that came in, they all did a job. And I thought Twanzabi had a good game, and he'll do... You know, he'll be better for getting 90 minutes under his belt, I'm sure. Because, you know, the squad depth needs to be there. You know, it was important to rest a few people and give the likes of Whelan a rest. Yeah. Obviously, Hawes wasn't fit. Green needed a rest. You know, Mings, he'll be out for Saturdays. I mean, the first yellow for Mings is silly, really, to get involved in that. And then the second one, it kind of is what it is, unfortunately.
It'll do him good to spend a game out, since he has given away a penalty in both our last games.
I did like his reaction coming on the pitch at full time, though. You know, it seems like there's a real togetherness around the squad, which...
He's just acting.
He's a good actor, then.
But no, Jedinak, I thought, was solid. He had a couple of key headers out, and both fullbacks were very good and still managed to get forward and force the issue despite being down to 10 men, because normally they'd be tucking in and just trying to hold out.
Yeah, so
all good. Or everyone was, everybody deserves a round.
Yeah, it was a real team performance. And it was one of those ones where, you know, at 2-1 with sort of, you know, 15, 10 minutes to go, you think this is where you manage the game. And this is where them being well-drilled and the stuff we saw when we went to the training ground and the ability to pop it around really comes into play against a team like Rotherham. Because Villa were very good on the ball, and they've become very good on the ball really since Grealish has come back at controlling the tempo of the game. And that's important. That's the sign of a good side.
But the goal was an example of two or three of those kind of moves, quick passing, and just, you know, let's say there are seven or eight defenders in that box and only three or four Villa players up. The passing was so slick that they took their defenders out of the game.
And the pace that easily. It happens at, of course, as well. You know, Villa, it's all very well, you know, just sort of tick attack and knocking it around in front of along the back line. But Villa can actually play through teams.
And this is one of the big differences from watching Villa over the last, you know, various teams over the last 10 years, is the speed of the passing and the intent of the passing.
Yeah, and the ball carrying, of course, as well. You know, Grealish, McGinn can carry the ball. Abraham can conjure.
And that was key, being a man down, that they needed to carry the ball to beat a man, to, you know, instantly take a man out. We never looked like we were chasing the game with one less player. It seemed that Dean Smith had a distinct plan how to do it. As we said, you know, going 4-3-2. Because, you know, at the end of the day, wingers can be redundant a lot of the times.
They can be passengers. I mean, we've said this about some of our wingers at times this year, when Ghazi's gone missing, or Balassi.
If you look at touch counts, wingers is way down from obviously centre midfield. So that obviously played on Smith's mind, because sometimes, like, if you play with two up front, the instinct is to take one of the forwards off straight away and just play with one up front, so you regain your defensive shape. You just become a bit impotent when it comes to attacking. But Smith decided to get rid of one of the wingers and still have that attacking threat, which was very, very good, because in the wider context, we want to win this game. So this is refreshing to see, and it has to hold well for the future. On the flip side, I don't think Rotherham really had a plan how to play. How can we take advantage of this 10 men? I don't think they had a long-term plan, like, let's tire them out and, you know, catch them at the end.
I mean, Steer made a very good save, which, you know, when you go away from home, you're never going to have it all your own way. But I think, relatively speaking, for 10 men away from home, I think we held them at arm's length pretty well and controlled the ball well. And, you know, it was a job, you know, after a pretty disastrous first half, was followed by a very, very professional second half performance.
Yeah, and ultimately we were under more pressure against Sheffield Wednesday when we had 11 men, I would say, in the balance. Right, it's all looking rosy. Now the next game will be against Bristol City, who are right up our asses in the league table. Just very quickly, do you fancy this game? In a nutshell, we're a Mings down. They've had an extra day's rest, and also we've obviously played about 50 minutes with 10 men. So they've got a lot of advantages in their favour, and obviously I think they've won three of the last four against the top six teams. I mean, they've beaten
they've recently went to Sheffield United and won, Middlesbrough and won, and tore West Brom apart in 20 minutes.
So, yeah.
I think they'll be confident, but there's no reason why Villa can't be.
I think they might come at us early doors.
To be brutally honest, I think if Bristol turn up and be open, I think that suits Villa better anyway.
Yeah.
These, you know, teams who've come to Villa Park and tried to be quite expansive, I remember they did it last year, didn't they? They were still trying to attack Villa when they were 2-0 down and got absolutely obliterated.
I think that both teams will be thinking, well, actually, a draw's not so bad. I think Villa
obviously... not now, with the way the results have gone this week. You know, results are always going to swing, but Villa will look a little bit, if they look a bit further ahead and think, do you know what, we've got Bolton away, a game we would really want to go and get a win in, and then Millwall at home, which is a tricky one, but I think Villa will be looking at.
In the back of the heads of both teams, like a draw will not be a bad result for both of them, because I think both of them are looking now thinking, well, I think they, you know, we're both going to qualify for the playoffs here. And actually, they potentially, let's say we finish fifth, we take on the Baggies. I think Bristol, the way they've been playing, whoever's going to be whoever's third is going to be pretty deflated. And Bristol at the moment are beating teams home or away. They don't care. So it's very dangerous. So we could be playing them in the final. It could be a dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
That would be something. But to be honest, if we're going to go to the final, I wouldn't mind playing Leeds there just for the spectacle, so to speak.
Yeah. Everyone will fear Villa. And I think there's plenty, you know, all the sides there will be confident they can do a, you know, get the job done.
Yeah, shame there's not another 10 games to go on top of what's left. Then we could still be looking at the title. Now we are fully charged.
Tell you what, though, it gets interesting at the weekend if the Baggies drop points and Villa win, though.
Yeah, I mean,
down to a one-point gap.
The only real difference will be just having that second leg at Villa Park if it is the Baggies and Villa.
Mm-hmm.
Right, please do give us a review if you listen on iTunes. Say what you want, but give us 5 stars. Follow on iTunes, follow on Spotify, and whatever method you listen to. And if you really want to support us, buy a My Old Man Said t-shirt with the podcast cover on the front of it.
Because apparently they're lucky, aren't they?
They are very lucky. That guy's got to wear it every game now.
Just saying.
Just saying, yeah, the more luck we have, maybe these t-shirts can power us to the Premier League. That's what we're saying. Or also, you can become a My Old Man Said patron, as mentioned earlier on in the show. Or even a My Old Man Said Facebook supporter. Right, until the Championship playoff quarterfinal against Bristol City, as it is now dubbed on the show, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
My old man said.
Because the thing about Rotherham is, although they're in the bottom three, they're only a point off, and they've
won three, lost three, haven't they? The last six, but they've picked up a couple of results. They've obviously got a big win on at the weekend against Forest, so they'll be plucky potentially.
Let's say they're still lively, so we can't underestimate them. We've got to go full force, because at the end of the day, 3 points is full force,
right? Fulham,
Fulham's hashtagging, you know, full
force. With your clapper.
Did they get relegated?
They did, them and their
clappers. Just a little bit. Only a little bit, though.
Hashtag full force.
Full force down before Easter.
full force.
We've got to get promoted. Because A, it's time the Barcelona of the Midlands took on Wolves in a clash.
Fucking Espanyol of the Midlands. We're the Barcelona of the Midlands. Fuck.
Yeah, no, that's what
I'm
saying.
No, I'm just emphasising the point. The stupid goddamn WWE mask. I mean, they are.
They're just Portuguese dog heads, basically, that wear Mexican wrestling masks.
I mean, that was shit. That is shit. On any day of the week, even if you're 4-0 up, it's rubbish.
The T-shirt underneath your shirt to pull up with a message, fair enough, not a problem. But having little props behind the goal.
Ready to go. It's so contrived.
If I was the keeper, I'd be stamping on and ripping up whatever's put behind my goalpost.
If I was the keeper, I'd go and hand it to him at full time and go, you might want to put that back on.
To walk out with the mask of shame.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.